every morning. Arabile Gumede and Nastasia Aronsa on Classic Business. Breakfast with MoneyWeb.
Well, Africa is leveraging mobile and digital technologies in its own ways in order to bring financial services to people in some of the most isolated and underdeveloped places on Earth. Mobile money has found its biggest global foothold in Africa, and according to the GSM Association, over 57% of the world's mobile money accounts are located in sub-Saharan Africa, and the continent's fintech market has been forecast to grow from around $200 million in value this year to close to $3 billion by 2020. That's only 2 years. Peter Zylstra, Regional Director of Digital Transformation for Middle East and Africa at Orange Business Services. It's only 2 years, but it's going to be massive. Good morning, Peter. How are you doing?
Good morning.
Good morning. So I was just saying that it's absolutely only going to be 2 years in which we'll jump from $200 million in value in 2018 to close to $3 billion in 2020. What's going to spark this uptick?
Yeah, so if you look at the numbers, I mean, they're simply staggering. But I think what we see is two things in the market. One is an evolution, and this is partly a technology evolution from 2G to 3G till eventually 4G, from the, let's say, the feature phones till the cheap smartphones till the more sophisticated smartphones. But it's also partly a revolution, I would say. Revolution in terms of more and more people adopting these new technologies and willing to actually share money over the technologies, more and more players in the ecosystem who are stepping into this market, allowing now for micro loans, micro insurances, peer-to-peer borrowing. So you can see that actually it's quite getting heated in the market. Telcos expressing ambitions to become banks, and some of them have already become banks. So there's quite a bit happening in this market space.
Yeah, if we take a look at just the earnings of Vodacom here in South Africa just yesterday, you know, a large portion of their earnings did come from M-Pesa, which is, of course, happening across the African continent. Maybe not so much here in South Africa on its own, but clearly the need for it is quite visible. Just how much growth exactly are you expecting to see just with just for South Africa on its own?
I just want to, you mentioned M-Pesa. It's an interesting example because it's often used as, you know, the proof of digitalization. But we see currently still 90% of transactions in Kenya are actually cash-based. So what you see in South Africa, but also in Kenya, is that this transaction-based economy, this cash economy, is rapidly moving into a digital economy. And that creates a lot of new services which will drive, I would say, the revenues that you hinted at before, the market uptake.
Yeah. So where does this mostly happen? I mean, yes, fine, we say the rural areas, but which countries seem to be aimed at the biggest growth areas?
So if you look at, if you would plot, let's say, the users that are currently having a mobile money account versus the actual uptake of the services, I think you can see it quite mature already in Eastern Africa and partly also in South Africa. But the real growth for coming years is going to happen in countries like Egypt, in countries in Nigeria. In Egypt, for example, you have about 100 million population, out of which only 10 million currently have a bank account. Mm. Now, if the regulatory changes will happen, then you can, within the coming years, expect at least 10 to maybe 30 million people who will come into the banking system. These underbanked populations currently are almost waiting to step into that market. So phenomenal growth we expect in countries like Nigeria and Egypt and Morocco.
Sure. And some of the apps or the fintech players themselves who are making their mark, I mean, of course, we've just mentioned M-Pesa, but there surely is a little more.
Yeah, there are quite a number of interesting players. And what's interesting is that nowadays, it seems the access to capital for African fintech players is moving up, is making it possible for them actually to expand their operations. As you know, the big challenge for fintech is obviously to try to get access to capital to invest in their solutions, the product, and obviously the marketing. Now it's much more easy compared to 2-3 years ago because we have some good solid references now in Africa of global fintech companies. Accelerant is one, Jumo is another. And they obviously become, I would say, the leaders for the emerging fintech industry. So it's becoming more easier for fintech to get access to capital. And it's also becoming a bit more easier to talk to the banks and craft partnership with banks and telcos. That was also different a couple of years ago. It was still a little bit of, wait-and-see approach, I would say, from the banks. But nowadays, banks are proactively reaching out to these smaller ecosystem players, these fintechs, and actually nurturing and making them part of their ecosystem.
Yeah, that's certainly very, very significant. Well, appreciate your time there, Peter Zylstra, who is the Regional Director for Digital Transformation in the Middle East and Africa for Orange Business Services.
Every morning, Arabile Gumede and Nastasia Arensa on Classic Business. Breakfast with MoneyWeb.
At 7:48, Arabile, we can't end the show without talking about Stan Lee.
No, we certainly cannot. I found out yesterday that Spider-Man was actually his favorite comic that he created. It's quite interesting because I don't know if that is seen as the biggest superhero across his spectrum, that is, across the Marvel universe, that is. So it's quite interesting on that front that he actually thought Spider-Man was going to be a bigger hit than some of the other characters. And of course, he's the likes of Iron Man, the likes of Captain America, the likes of Hulk have clearly superseded. But when Spider-Man did come out initially, the first movie, I think it was in 2002,
mm-hmm.
it was a massive, massive hit. So yeah, look, RIP to Stan Lee. He really will be missed. And his cameos in the movies as well will certainly be missed.
So in the creation of Spider-Man, he used to work with somebody by the name of Jack Kirby.
Mm.
And he writes in his biography that when they started the character Spider-Man, he found that some of Spider-Man's sketches, the early sketches, made him too handsome and too confident. So what he wanted to do with a lot of his characters is that he wanted to create this personality where you weren't necessarily insulting the intelligence of adults, but you were creating superheroes who struggled with things like everyone else. Like they struggled with the fact that I'm having feelings for someone or I have allergies. Spider-Man had allergies.
Yeah.
And so he then got another artist by the name of Steve Ditko, who came up with the current look that we have for Spider-Man. And they introduced Spider-Man in 1962, and it became its own comic a year later and went on to be Marvel's most successful character.
Yeah, certainly did. And I mean, that's very, very, very huge, really, when you think of it that way, right? It's it was such a successful business that he sort of put together there.
Okay,
as well.
So here's a question. Of all the characters that he's ever created, which one was your favorite?
Wow.
I'm putting you in the spot.
Can I answer that before the close? Like, they're just far too many.
Okay, top three. That can't be difficult.
Sure. Yeah, that's even worse, maybe even. Look, Spider-Man is certainly a big one. Iron Man is I think, was very significant. He didn't necessarily create it, but it came from a long-stemming series in which he was a part of.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to give that to him as well and say, yeah. And I think if it's not Captain America, it's the Hulk. One of those two.
Okay.
But definitely there or thereabouts. Those are probably my favorite.
Okay. Me, it would have to be the Hulk, Spider-Man, and Doctor Strange.
Really?
Yeah.
Mind games, huh? Mind games. Let me give you something else of significant, you know, importance here.
Mm-hmm.
The Great Depression. You remember that?
I wasn't around, but I read about it.
I'm very thankful you weren't, because you might be a little different with regards to the age thing. Which
let's call Chris Gilmore.
Well, so that took place around the 1930s, right? Uh-huh. And beginning, of course, in the United States. The timing of the Great Depression varied across the nations. Mostly started between 1929 and lasted until the late 1930s. Do you know when the first superhero comic or the earliest superhero came about?
I'm going to guess 1938.
34.
Not
and
bad.
That's the first reference was to Mandrake the Magician. And then the first, the comeback, the massive, massive comeback of superheroes, particularly in the last, you know, couple of years or so, was back in 2008 when Iron Man came out. Yes, there was, of course, Spider-Man, but the phenomenon recaptured the hearts of many people back in 2008. And guess what happened in 2008? It was the global financial crisis. I'm just saying that during tough times, people need superheroes. And clearly, we're managing to get that right.